Well, it turns out Jesus is not the vaccine. The vaccine is the vaccine.
It's showtime.
It most assuredly is. It is the 8th day of December 2021. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. It's also where you go if you'd like to help us keep the Horn on the air via the PayPal interface there. If you show up right now, you'll be greeted in the chat room. Pick out a screen name and password if you never have before. You'll be greeted by early arrivers Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and capably moderated. No, incapably moderated. Probably not moderated at all by me. Pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, will be along, I trust, somewhere along the way. Hi, I'm Robin, and like I said, it's the 8th day of December, and it is also the middle of the week, downhill to Thursday, hump day. But, of course, here, beloveds, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Yes. I had a dispatch from the home cathedral telling me that the little old blue-haired ladies and the little old blue-haired men were hard at work today in their imaginary fellowship hall kitchen, creating lots and lots of delicious imaginary prayer meeting Wednesday meals to go out to the imaginary congregation. Because we're not doing in-person fellowship hall stuff, at least until it's safe, to do so. But the little old blue-haired ladies were roasting beef and they baked homemade bread, and they were doing roast beef splits with mashed potatoes and gravy and the homemade bread and the roast beef, and it was just heavenly. There was some carrot and raisin salad with plenty of a nice mayonnaise dressing. Yeah, there that was there too, and a beautiful cinnamon crunch bundt cake with whipped cream for dessert, and the deacons did show up, of course, and because they have to get the deacon's cut, and they did a number on the cakes, I'm told. At any rate, things are at least going swimmingly in that regard. Down here it was kind of a grilled cheese on sourdough kind of day. And frankly, that's okay, because grilled cheese are damn good food. But the fact of the matter is, the deacons would love to be passing the heavy brass-bound velvet-lined plates, but since we're not doing in-person service as well, that'll have to wait. But if you'd like to help out, like I said, the PayPal interface is at headon.live, right there on the main page. And of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And that means that we say thanks today to our 8th day of the month subscribers. That means thanks so much to Kat. Thank you, Kat. And thanks as well to Sue in the Great Northwest. And thank you to Brendan. Thank you, Marsha. Thank you, David in San Diego. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Dwayne. And thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. We find ourselves with a fundraising goal of $800. $800. Mm-hmm. Ooh, sneezes are an adventure now. But if you'd like to help out, just run over to headon.live and use the PayPal interface. Of course, the United States Mail still runs to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. That's always helpful. So thank you to those of you who use the U.S. Postal Service. Like I said, I'll be calling out the thank yous when I get back home, because It's about a 10-hour drive to check the mailbox from here, and I don't think I'm quite up to that yet. But thank you. Thank you very much indeed. With it being prayer meeting Wednesday, I am, of course, Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Aggravated Abbess, Naughty Nun, Pissed Off Prioress, Agitated Agnostic, etc. Robin Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense for this prayer meeting Wednesday, and we got some prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. Yeah, like I said, it turns out Jesus was not the vaccine. Only the vaccine is the vaccine. The vaccine doesn't work if you don't get it. So Joshua Feuerstein. I don't know. He was preaching earlier this year about what you don't gots to do in regard to the
Rona. Listen to me. I understand, and let me speak now to the cameras around the world, to every pastor that's watching this broadcast, to every Christian that has cowered in your home. I realize that for this last year that maybe you've been fed fear and fear and fear, but the Bible says that God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. You have a sound mind. You don't have to wear the mask. You got Jesus. You don't need the vaccine. You got Jesus.
I think that was right before he hollered for people to come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon. No. Yeah. You don't have to wear that mask. You've got Jesus. Oops. Because the goddess of irony is not going to listen to a tripe like that and have her little pink tomato nose tweaked and then not do something about it. So back on September 24th, Josh Feuerstein was tweeting, I'm proud to be unvaxxed. And later said, America's revival will be providing free religious exemptions to anyone who attends our October 8th, 10th revival in Frisco, Texas. And things like fully unvaccinated. He was supposed to address a Christian nationalist congregation in where else? Tennistan, Knoxville, to be precise. He was going to preach at the Patriot Church in Knoxville. That's an outfit that's run by some dude bro named Ken Peters. I don't know. That sentence seems to want a predicate, but never mind. Ken Peters what? Ken Peters who? Shame on me. We're in the gutter already, aren't we? It's only 8 minutes past the hour. But not so much.
I started thinking about, when I was writing my sermon today, Pastor Joshua Feuerstein was supposed to be our preacher. And he called in last moment because he might have got the thing. You know the thing? He might have got that thing. And so he's packing the droxy and the ivermectin, so we want to keep him and his family in prayer.
He's packing the droxy and the ivermectin. Mm-hmm. And they can't even say COVID-19. It's the thing. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the goddess of irony, having had her little pink tomato nose tweaked by Josh Feuerstein, said, here's a lovely case of the Rona for you. And, nobody can say that he wasn't warned. But, you know, their brand of religion says their God didn't create people who could create vaccines. Oh, no. They've got natural immunity. And, of course, we all know how this dickhead votes. Mm-hmm. The other side of the religious spectrum, a preacher who tried to do a decent thing. Now, trying to do something decent with a semi-fundamentalist flock can prove difficult, to say the very least. Enter Pastor Craig Duke. He was featured on a recent episode of We're Here. And We're Here is an HBO series. It's in season 2 now. And because it's all the rage and all the fad, We're Here is about a group of drag queens who go around doing drag queen makeovers on people who are willing, small town America, who are willing to be drag queen made over. Well, Pastor Craig Duke was actually taking his pastoring duties seriously there at Newburgh New 90 Methodist Church. He wasn't being an asshole. His daughter had come out as pansexual a couple of years before. And so when We're Here reached out to Pastor Craig Duke to give him a drag queen makeover, and Lordy, they would have had work to do, but I'm not judging. He said, there are very few people of faith saying anything truthful about how God feels about gay people, and it's all unconditional love. I'm just really thankful they chose my dad, his daughter, Tiffany, said. I don't think him being judged for being on the show could ever put a damper on how positive an experience it was for my family and those around us. Pastor Duke even said, I was surrounded and immersed in a culture that I've never been immersed in. And one of the things in ministry, if you want to involve people different than yourself in your ministry, you have to go to where people different than you are. The invitation to be part of the show allowed me that. What? Am I doing this show and nobody
cares? You have your hotspot on.
Yes, I have my hotspot on. Oh, damn it. Okay, nobody's in. Well, at least we were recording, so no, people were hearing if they were listening to the White Rose stream. They weren't hearing if they were listening to the head-on.live stream. Yeah. Okay. That's, yeah. Well, now we're there. Teach me to just get all off and going. Well, I thought I had grabbed it. There. All better now. I think. I guess. I hope. Oh, good. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. All better now. Yes. Huh. That's kind of weird because it means that, well, you, sorry, if you're listening on the head-on.live stream, you'll have to go back to the podcast and catch the first 14 minutes of the program. My sincere apologies. But we were talking about Pastor Craig Duke, who volunteered to be drag queen made-over, and, trying to do that whole hanging out with the sinners and the publicans and the tax collectors and the whores, and because that's the way the world views anybody who is not white cishet normative. Pastor Duke did it, and they did a drag queen makeover on Pastor Duke, and he had a wonderful time. And then this showed up. Unfortunately, Craig's participation in this show caused much turmoil in the church that he was serving at the time, and ultimately led to him being relieved of pastoral duties at that church. Craig will continue with a significantly reduced salary until no later than February 28th. Obviously, this poses a major challenge to Craig and his family as they determine their next steps. Well, it's a good thing, because people stepped up in that regard and raised $42,796 for him to keep him and his family afloat while they look for a church that's not filled with ignorance, bigotry, fear, superstition, and stupidity. Good luck to them. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the New 90 Methodist Church is, of course, in Tallahassee. A guy named Mitch Gieselman. Mm-hmm. Gieselman is a guy who takes care of your Giesel. Couldn't resist. He is superintendent South and Southwest District, Indiana, New 90 Methodist Church. Letter says, no single resolution will be satisfactory to all. I've received numerous calls and emails that are highly critical of Craig's actions, and I've received numerous messages of support for him. In such a polarized climate, our main intent is to foster an environment in which both NUMC, Newburgh New 90 Methodist Church, and the Duke family can move forward in grace. Craig has not resigned, nor has he been fired, as these are not actions that are consistent with our appointment system. While there is a diversity of opinion regarding the moral implications of Reverend Duke's actions, he has not been found to have committed any chargeable offense or other violation of the New 90 Methodist Book of Discipline. Wait, there's a New 90 Methodist Church Book of Discipline? That sounds kinky. You will have to be disciplined. With a rousing spanking. No, spank me too. Yes, right, yeah. Ah, naughty zoot. Left the grail-shaped beacon in. Mm-hmm. During his time of being relieved from pastoral duties, he will be engaging in a process of renewal, reflection, and recovery that will be monitored by our Conference Director of Leadership Development, Bishop Trimble, and myself. So just to be clear, because he, in an effort to reach out to a community unlike his own, by letting himself be given a drag queen makeover, he is going to have to, engage in renewal, reflection, and recovery. He has to recover. He has to recover from being dolled up like a drag queen. He has to be healed from it, I guess. You know, once you've been drag queen dolled up, you know. What is it? I don't know. Once drag, you never. I don't know. He will not, however, be returning to the NUMC pulpit. Because, see, now the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, mostly Republicans, let's be honest, there at the Newburgh, New 90 Methodist Church congregation, they can never see Pastor Craig the same way again, because it doesn't matter if he stands up there in a three-piece bespoke suit from Savile fucking Row, they're going to see a drag queen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you hope that in the long run, love wins. I don't think Pastor Craig is going to join the drag queen circuit, but oh well. And meanwhile, let's check in with the Diocese of Marquette. Mm-hmm. The Roman Catholic Diocese. Roman Catholic Diocese in Marquette. It's up in Wisconsin. And they apparently, there's apparently some sick fucks at work in the Diocese of Marquette. How do I know? Well, because they proudly proclaimed their bigotry. By the way, Matt in San Francisco says, I missed the first few minutes, but if he needs to recover from being dragged up, they must not have been doing it right. Yeah, I know. I need, let's see here. There we go. Okay. The Diocese of Marquette has announced that trans people can't get the magic cracker and drink the magic wine unless they repent for their transness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Imagine that. Because, you know, God is love, y'all. But it just so happens, and I'm tickled pink to announce this, it just so happens that I have the irrepressible, the one, the only, the fabulous, the brilliant Terry Ellen with me on the program this evening. She just jumped in. And I wanted to talk about a number of things with her, but lo and behold, she jumped in on the, right as I was getting to the Diocese of Marquette. Lovely people that they are there. Hey, big sis, how are you? Where is the audio? Are you there? Maybe I spoke too soon. Terry. All right, let's try this again. Okay, Terry, are you there? Terry? Well, this is frustrating. Terry. Oh, that's a hell of a time for a cord to go bad. Okay, let's try something else here. Give me a sec here. Sorry about the technical issues. Okay, and that, and this, and... Okay, do I have you, Terry?
Can you hear me now?
Now I do, yes. Hallelujah, glory, praise God.
Okay. No idea.
Me either. I thought I had a cord going bad here or something.
I could hear you just fine, but you could not hear me. And so I am doing it on my phone instead of the PC. So.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, lovely lady.
Good afternoon to you too, madam. Hope you're doing well up there in the Magic City. So,
oh yes, just sitting here on the flanks of Red Mountain and living the indolent life of a recovering trans woman. You know, somebody passed me a bonbon.
You know, I really don't care for bonbons that much.
Me either. I hate them.
They're
gross.
I don't get the appeal. I really don't.
Now, truffles are a different matter.
Did you say truffles?
Yeah, truffles. You know, chocolate truffles.
I don't think I've ever had a truffle, actually.
I'll have to remedy that.
Aren't those the fungus truffles?
Well, and those are the real truffles, the ones that pigs sniff out of the ground in Italy. Yeah.
Yes, Yes.
No, these are wonderful chocolate confections with like rich chocolate fudge and nut and caramel centers and yeah, but tasty. I trust you had a fantastic, wonderful, and lovely day.
I wouldn't rank it that high, but it was okay.
Well, you know, initially the reason I reached out so that we could have a conversation is because this is one of those, you know, December 7th, 1941 was a day that will live in infamy. I guess yes. It's somewhat slightly less infamous, but this is, of course, it blows my mind, the 40th anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon.
Actually, the
41st. 41st, yeah. Well, English major, can't cipher worth beans. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
1980. We were seniors in high school. I remember that day really well. I really did. It sucked, for lack of a better adjective. It sucked.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot.
There was, in fact, it was a Monday. So it was going to be particularly, I mean, you know, Mondays being Monday. And so I was working and I wasn't watching Monday Night Football, but they broke in to a Patriots game, as a matter of fact. They broke into a Patriots game to announce that he had been shot. And apparently Howard Cosell.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It shook Howard Cosell, and I've got the audio here. I think it'll be so nice when I get home and I've got my regular studio in front of me.
Oh yes.
Here we go.
But you're doing.
But it's suddenly been placed in total perspective for us. I'll finish this. They're in the hurry-up offense. Third down, four. Foreman. It'll be fourth down. Kavanaugh will let it run down for one final attempt. He'll let the seconds tick off to give Miami no opportunity whatsoever. Timeout is called. 3 seconds remaining. John Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard, you have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back. Rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which in duty bound we had to take. Frank?
Indeed it is. 3 seconds remain. John Smith.
Off the hands of Rose, the tight end. Alertly, Nat Moore got the touchdown. They blocked the field goal attempt of John Smith. Delvin Williams, taken quickly there. It was number 85, Julius Adams. Gain of a yard. It'll be third and seven.
In case the folks missed the earlier news flash, ABC News has confirmed that John Lennon, a member of the famed Beatles, maybe the best known member, was shot twice in the back outside of his apartment building in the west side of New York tonight, rushed to the Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. An unspeakable tragedy. Details on Nightline 30 minutes after the end of this contest.
Damn.
Still hard to hear.
It is.
You know, all these years later, still hard to hear those words that John Lennon is dead, you know. I was 17 years old. And I was just getting into the Beatles. And that was a real shock. That was a real shock.
Oh, so,
I don't know if I'd say he was the most famous of the Beatles.
Perhaps the most famous of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Of all, but I love the way Cosell included of all the Beatles, as if there were like thousands. Yeah.
Of all the Beatles, all, you know, four of them. But yeah, you know, he's been dead longer than he was alive now. 41 years. He was 40 when he died.
Yeah.
Having just turned 40 on October the 9th of that same year.
Yeah, and he was coming back from working on the Double Fantasy album.
Yep.
Which was a great album, except for the part where Yoko yodeled.
Yeah, pretty much any of her tracks.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, it was, you know.
It was surreal. And for my part.
What was the guy's name? Mark
David Chapman.
Mark Chapman had Lennon sign an album earlier in the day.
Yeah.
You know, and came back that evening and apparently, you know, yelled at John as he was getting, I think he was getting out of the car. They were coming back to the Dakota, and Yoko had gotten out first and kind of gone on ahead of him. And Lennon was, you know, getting out of the car and had a handful of cassettes from tracks they had recorded that day. And Chapman took a shooter's stance, both hands on the gun, yelled out, you know, Mr. Lennon. And then Lennon turned and Chapman just shot him repeatedly.
And he is still incarcerated.
I hope he never gets parole.
Yeah, he is at the Wende, W-E-N-D-E, correctional facility in New York State. And he's 66 years old. And of course, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, it is appropriate to note that he was incensed with John Lennon over his, and of course the evangelical world got incensed when John said, "Well, the Beatles are more popular than Jesus."
Yeah, but that was years and years.
Yeah, but he was still
1965, 64 when you know John made that statement, and had since you know tracked it back and explained his comment and everything. Of course, there were lots of Beatle bonfire burnings of albums and whatnot, especially you know right here in the South.
Yes, of course.
Of course, my goodness, yes, we do love to burn books and other things that offend us.
Witches.
That's it. Witches.
He was among other things, and you know it's.
He did it to impress a certain girl.
Yeah. And he also had plans to possibly bump off Johnny Carson, Paul McCartney, and Elizabeth Taylor.
Damn! Did not know that.
But, you know, John's song Imagine has become probably the single song most associated with him. Apparently, Mark David Chapman despised that song because Imagine There's No Heaven. He was also a big Todd Rundgren fan, I'm seeing here. And I remember reading, because it was one of those rites of passage, one of those things back then one did at that age. I remember reading The Catcher in the Rye and how edgy it was supposed to be because the protagonist, Holden Caulfield, uses a bunch of bad words, you know, bad words. He wanted to model his life on that of Holden Caulfield in Catcher in the Rye. He wasn't okay. He had quit a security guard job in Hawaii and traveled to New York for this. And he now says that he
and had the gun in his luggage.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how you quite fly. Well, never mind.
Yeah.
But he said he didn't kill John Lennon to get famous. But there was a book that came out in 1992, Let Me Take You Down, Inside the Mind of Mark David Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
He became eligible for parole. I didn't know this. In the year 2000. And he's been up for parole 11 times. And he has been denied parole each time. And I hope he is denied parole every time. Because, honestly, Terry, how long do you think he would last on the outside?
Nowadays he might. It's not as, you know, he might be all right depending on where he was, change his name kind of thing, you know.
So who knows?
But I don't think he should be, frankly.
He was 25 years old when he did it. And yeah. and in current context, just to sort of, I look at him and I think of, and maybe I'm wrong, but I look at him and I think of Kyle Rittenhouse. And of course, Kyle's not going to he's not going to do any prison time. But he has.
That one is a case unto itself. How you kill an unarmed man and claim it to be self-defense when you're the one with the assault rifle. I have a hard time how the jury came to that conclusion.
That whole trial was puppet mastered, among other things, by the judge.
And I hope the families go after Rittenhouse in a civil way, because it does not have to be beyond a reasonable doubt, you know.
Right, a preponderance of the evidence, 50.00001% right. More likely than not. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to make money, and he deserves not to be able to keep any of it.
No, he should not be allowed to capitalize off those murders. I don't, you know, how else do you describe it? Those are not self-defense. That's just not. It's like you brought the gun. Nobody else was killed that night. You killed them. It is difficult to surmise a self-defense. I mean, the one person that had a gun was wounded, you know, but
yeah.
That guy didn't even point it at him.
No, people were trying to disarm him.
Yeah, and that was part of his, it's like, well, they were going to take my gun and use it against me, so I killed them. God, that's, you know, circular logic. How do you not see that as circular logic, you know? And it sets horrible precedents, you know, for other people. Oh, I can have the gun and I can claim self-defense over people who don't have a gun. But, you know, if I just get upset because they come at me, or they're upset, I have a gun, well, I can kill them, and I get away with murder, literally.
God.
It seemed to be that's what that trial said, basically.
Well, and another thing, you know, of course, Mother Rittenhouse knew what he was up to some degree or another, and, of course, said nothing because freedom. And if we look back at the events leading up to the murder of John Lennon, his wife, Mark David Chapman's wife, in Hawaii there, he told her that he was obsessed with killing John Lennon. Mm-hmm. He showed her the gun. He showed her the bullets. And she said nothing.
Ain't that nice? How does one
And I don't know how a guy on a security. I remember the price of airfares back in that day, and he was flying back and forth from Hawaii to New York. How do you do that?
Repeatedly?
Yeah.
Why? Why was he flying back and forth? I mean,
well, he flew there in October thinking he was going to do it. And then
like his birthday or something.
I don't know, but probably. And then he zipped down to Atlanta because he needed more bullets. I don't know. He went back to Hawaii, and that's when he told his wife. And then he flew back to New York and did the deed. Huh. How do you do that on a security guard salary?
I don't know. Do you even have a credit card at that point? You know, credit cards weren't near as common in that period of time. You know, it's like, you know, everybody got a credit card these days. Back then, you know, most people used cash, wrote a check or something like that, you know, unless you happen to have, what, American Express. That was one of the first credit cards. And the diner card. There was a diner card.
Diners Club, American Express.
Diners Club, American Express. So maybe he had an American Express card and he, you know, charged it and whatnot. So I don't know. How things like this happen when other people. I'm guessing she just convinced herself that he wouldn't do it. I suppose.
And then even when he flew back to New York, still said nothing. I mean, it's, you know, it's really weird. A lot of things had to fall into place for him to be able to do what he did. And they all did. Yeah. And they did. And of all the creepy, gross things that morning, John and Yoko's housekeeper came back from, I guess, a store run or something, but she had little 5-year-old Sean with her. And he reached past the housekeeper to shake Sean's hand and tell him he was a beautiful boy.
Yeah, how do you do that when you're going to kill that kid's father? How do you do that? You know, he said he did it because he wanted fame and glory. I mean, he's always going to be in the history books as man who killed a beetle.
Shot him in the back.
You know.
Jesus.
I thought one of the bullets went into John's shoulder.
It did. He unloaded.
From the front, that our side. I didn't think those bullets entered the back.
No, he fired 5 times, hit him 4 times, in the back and shoulder, and ultimately he bled out because one of the bullets ripped through his subclavian artery.
Yeah, it was like he was.
They took a squad, an NYPD squad car took him to the DOA.
Yeah, I knew. It wasn't even an ambulance; it was a police car that was there.
Yeah. And of course, I didn't see the Monday night football game. I didn't hear the announcement there. One of the things I remember best is that I was at work at the Gospel Voice, and we had UPI. Our wire service was UPI, United Press International, and they would send out bells, like 2 bells, 3 bells, and they sent out 7 bells. Which was like a couple of bells short of the nuclear missiles are flying. And I remember hearing those 7 bells and, you know, I probably was playing Dropkick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life or whatever. And ran into the old iron lung UPS machine and watched it urgent, 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 urgent. And John Lennon shot. And I announced it because it was big breaking news.
Sure it was, yeah.
And I got called.
I remember it coming over the radio.
Yeah.
I was doing push-ups or sit-ups or something in my bedroom, and it came over the radio that John Lennon had been shot in New York City, but that there weren't any more details than that at that point in time. Well, they hadn't declared him dead.
Well, I got called in on the carpet the next morning.
Following morning is when I heard.
Yeah, I knew he was dead by the time that I left work, but I got called in on the carpet the next day before my shift, and told never to announce the death of a secular star because he wasn't saved, and he was in hell now.
And how do you know that? Actually, there are reports that Lennon did become a Christian at one point.
Well, he was raised Christian.
Later in life reaffirmed it because of Bob Dylan and when Dylan went through his Christian period and whatnot. So there's debate on whether, you know, he was quote unquote saved or not, you know. And you know, some evangelicals, especially Southern Baptists, will say, well, you know, once saved, always saved.
I mean, that's what they told me.
Right. So anyway, there's that.
Well, the owner of the station. And
that, I mean, how Christian is it of somebody to go, well, they're just burning in hell, and I'm so glad that they're burning in hell. They almost say it whenever you hear somebody do that with glee in their voice.
Well, it will come as no surprise for you to find out that the owner of the station was a member of the Church of Christ.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that, you know, this holy righteousness of, I'm going to be seated at the right hand of God, and the rest of you pagans are going to be burning forever.
Y'all
going to
fry? You're going to fry so good.
It's like, and why would you be happy at that? Shouldn't that cause you great pain and you know, empathy and all that for your fellow human being to be fried by the ever-loving God kind of thing, you know?
God is love, y'all.
Yeah, it's like God is love. Well, you know, no. Not if he sets up an eternal burning, you know, fire and brimstone place for souls to be tortured for eternity because of what they did in a 40, 50, 20, 15 years on this planet. That seems
a bit extreme. Harsh.
A bit extreme, harsh, you know, just no rehabilitation or, you know, chance of parole.
That's really severe. That's some love. That is some love. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, Mark David Chapman later said that he harbored a deep-seated resentment for his wife, quote, that she didn't go to somebody, even the police, and say, look, my husband's bought a gun and he says he's going to kill John Lennon.
Oh, so it's her fault. It's your fault for not stopping me from doing this deed. How dare you not stop me?
Yeah, cherchez la femme.
Oh, yeah, that's just, I'm really the victim because you didn't stop me. I'm the victim.
You know, thereby proving the truth of one of the more provocative song titles that he wrote along the way. Woman is the of the world.
Yes. Well, there's also the song from the White Album, "Happiness is a Warm Gun."
Yeesh. Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
That one.
And it turns out, and one of the, I always think on this day ever since I found out, this is also, that same night was also the birthday of a member of our community, our dear friend Jeremy in Vermont. So happy birthday to Jeremy. That's a heck of a thing to have run parallel with your birthday every year. But there had to be people who, it's probably more than just Jeremy. But that would be a weird thing to have to deal with, along the way. And, mm-hmm. Nonetheless, happy birthday.
Are you talking about Sean?
No. I'm talking about our friend Jeremy in Vermont was born the night that John Lennon was killed.
Oh. Well, you know, I know, John's son, Sean Lennon, was born on October the 9th. He shares a birthday with his father.
Oh, that's got to be weird.
So, yeah, that's a tough thing. You know, you celebrate your dad's birthday on your birthday, and your dad was murdered when you were 5 years old.
And his murderer shook your hand.
Oh, God. You know, that.
Yeah. So, All things being, regardless of everything else, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Besides that, did you enjoy the play?
God.
Well, you know, it was cut short, so I didn't get to see the end of it. But
how it ended.
It was quite funny earlier. But...
So, are there any big doings in Miss Terry Ellen's world these days?
Oh, you know, getting divorced. that's a big doing, but...
Well, it seems to come to us all.
Yes, that's a... You know, that's worked out, and we are amicable, and it's been okay, and I think we will both be okay, so it's just...
Yeah. And, well, that seems to be the case here.
It's a tough road, as you know.
Yeah. I think we've talked about the fact in the past that, you know, you lead a group for trans people down in South Alabama.
Southern Transgender Alliance, as it's called.
Yep.
Yes.
We have a meeting.
It's on Facebook.
We have a meeting coming up, don't we?
Saturday, mm-hmm. Okay. Of which there'll be a physical meeting, of which I've told people to go to, that's being done by another support group. There's several here in Mobile, Alabama. But my life is somewhat hectic and complicated these days, and I'm not going to be able to physically do a in-person meeting as yet, but I'll probably do a virtual meeting that afternoon. But there'll be one at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning that people can actually physically go to. And so I've told people in the group to go to it if they physically can. And otherwise, we'll do a virtual one.
I was going to say, but I'll be able to doll up and attend the virtual one at least.
Yes, ma'am. You sure enough shall.
I'm looking forward to it because one of the things that has attended this recuperation, deal. And I know you know... there's a little bit of stir crazy that comes along with this.
not just a little, but a lot, really. Binging shows on Netflix and other streaming channels is a great help, but it also gets old, and you miss seeing people. You really do.
Yeah, and you know you've got a wealth of riches in terms of resources and support groups down there. Up where I am in West Virginia, you know, we don't have several. We don't have one. So, you know,
well, honey, maybe that needs to be on your agenda.
Yeah, I know, but I don't want to attend a meeting with just me. I'm kind of a unicorn up there.
There's that. It is difficult. And trans people, especially newbies, newly cracked, and exploring transition and wanting to present as their authentic self and scared to death to do so in the beginning, because it's a frightening, terrifying thing, you know.
Lord God, yes.
You've only been on hormones for a little while or whatever, and you're still trying to figure out what your style is and so on and so forth. And it is a real daunting thing, you know?
Yeah. And you know, little things like finding a pair of shoes.
Shoes, blouses, tops, pants, the whole nine yards, your hair, you know, in the beginning, you know, male to females, may not have the long hair that helps so much, and are dealing with wigs and trying to figure wigs out and what looks best, and such. Don't look like you're a really bad Halloween costume,
mm-hmm.
You know? So,
it occurs to me,
it really is.
It occurs to me, I was just thinking about this. While we were talking, this is right around 1 year right now, today.
Yes.
Around 1 year that you and I found out, you know.
I found out you were trans. You found out I was. I mean, you found out I was earlier than I found.
Well, you kind of made it difficult not to figure out.
That still is an amazing event in my life of finding out that you were trans. That was like, holy shit.
There's two of us.
Yeah, really. You know, and as I've said this before, and I think I said it on your show, that I had told one of our classmates just a day or 2 days prior to you coming out that, you know, there had to be at least two others in our class because of, you know, statistics.
Yeah, because of our class size.
The elite. Right, you know, and then there you were. So I don't know who the third person is, but I suspect there's one out
there. They're out there.
Somewhere. Got to be, yeah.
Kind of due for it, since there's two trans women, we're kind of due for a trans guy.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. And I suspect odds are that there is a trans guy. May not be out, may not be transitioning or whatever, but yeah.
Because I think I was 3 months into my hormone therapy. And mm-hmm. I don't know why it was that I wound up over at that page for our graduating class. But, you know, thumb, scrolling. Do you know me?
And you come upon my riddle.
Yes.
Do you know me? Do you know who I am?
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, that was...
And then, you know, the private, the you know, the using Messenger, and it's like, yeah, I just started 3 months ago. I am too.
Yeah.
And I saw the ... where you were typing, and I think the next phrase was, get the fuck out.
Yeah, something like that. It just blew my mind, the surreality of it, that you and I played football together.
Badly.
Stood on the sidelines during practice and talked and reminisced and debated the problems of the world and whatnot, and neither one of us knew about the other, and we both knew we were trans.
I swear it's a book. It's a book, Terry. It's a book. or maybe a treatment for a Hallmark Channel movie.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's just, I don't know, it's just the odds. The odds? You know, it's like, holy shit, I need to go get some lotto tickets or something. Lord have mercy. You know?
Drive over to Florida.
I mean, there were 243 people in our senior class. And the odds of us knowing each other, you know, there's a lot of people in our class I don't know, you know,
yeah.
Perusing. I mean, it was a, you know, 30, 40 people that I knew, and even smaller group, of course, that I knew fairly well. So, and even on the football team, most of those guys I didn't know, didn't get to know, weren't friends with. And there you and I were. And we got to be friends because of being on the football team. That, you know.
Well, we were both taking college bound classes, so we had a bunch of classes together.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, but still, I mean, you know, that's
sitting there and each of us knowing and never saying a word because, well, you couldn't say a word.
Oh hell, I was, you know, no, I didn't breathe any of that to anybody ever until, oh God, I think, you know, I came out in a forum online in like 2010, 2011, something like that. You know, that was first time I ever, you know, maybe not said the words, but typed the words.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, I was almost 50 years old, 47, before I breathed it to anybody. And I didn't tell somebody in person till 2011, that, you know, in real life. That was the therapist that told me just to read a book and not think about it.
What?
Yeah. That's what she told me. Well, just read a book and try not to think about it. That doesn't work.
That doesn't sound like an effective coping strategy.
Well, she really didn't have experience with trans patients, even though, you know, I found her because her little profile on Psychology Today said she did. And she was the only one I could find at the time. And so, you know, I went with it. I think I saw her for maybe 6 months or something.
Well, you recall my experience with trying to find my first therapist. They tried to hook me up with a therapist who got both her bachelor's and her master's from Jerry Falwell University.
Liberty, yeah.
And I saw that and I called back and I said, no, I don't think this is going to be a good fit for us.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not here to try the pray it away thing. I've already done that. It didn't work. So I'm trying to find a more effective means of therapy for myself. So thank you. Oh, God, things not working out well.
Yeah, and then, you know, all the business with Jerry Falwell Jr. and Becca.
And, I like to watch.
And, yeah, him sitting in a corner with a guilt mask and a ball gag.
It's like, really? You know, and how many people in leadership at that university knew? How many people just, you know, wink and nod? This kind of crap goes on.
Yeah, well, that's just Jer. That's just Jer and Becca.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, yeah. I know his heart's in the right place and all that kind of bullshit, you know, that crap that goes on. It is mind-boggling. And then, you know, women at that university who come out and, you know, tell people at the university they've been sexually assaulted, they get demonized for, oh, why were you even in the same room with
me? What were you wearing?
You know, that's against our, you know, university policy for you to even, you agreed not to be, so it's really your fault. It's that same sort of misogynistic crap that goes on and on and on.
Yeah, sufficient.
You know, it's always the woman's fault.
It's like the book says.
You were in the wrong place.
Yeah, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's not the guy's fault. Yeah, it's not the guy's fault. What were you doing? What'd you say? Was alcohol involved? Well, you're not supposed to drink alcohol at the university. So there's another demerit, and so on and so forth.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, you started saying things. Okay, you started saying things to yourself, you know, long about, you said 2011. I don't think the trans community was quite as much on the radar back then as we are now.
Oh, no, it certainly was not. No, wasn't. It near the amount of, you know.
Yeah, that didn't mean the hate wasn't there, but was it easier? Was it, and how can you, was it easier to start the journey then?
No, I think it would be easier to start it now, just because of the plethora of therapists and doctors. I mean, my God, it has really kind of exploded in the number of surgeons that do surgeries, the number of therapists that are trained and have experience with trans patients. I mean, it's real easy these days to find a therapist, whereas I had to hunt to find one back in the early teens. It was, you know, I went for a while, I don't know, 6-7 months until I found the one that you know, saved my life, basically, you know. And
well, I know there's still a lot of people out there who try the DIY do it yourself method of hormone therapy.
Yeah, I did that.
You did that too, right?
I did that too. Yeah, I had read two or three medical articles that said that late life transitioners like you and I, sometimes if they took a course of low dose estrogen, that it could mitigate the desire to transition. It's like, I'll try that, you know, and it did.
Curiously, that was the first thing I said when I, you're just going to take a little micro dose and just kind of take the edge off.
Yeah. It does. It does take the edge off, but it did not. It was a double-edged sword, that's for sure. You know, you take that estrogen and it's, you know, the best antidepressant drug ever.
Yep.
Makes you feel good. And it was the thing, first thing I ever took that it made my dysphoria go away for a while. I thought I was cured. So like, oh my God, this is great. I can just, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you're cured.
For a while, I was good and I got off of it. And oh my God, 2-3 weeks. And it felt like my dysphoria had been ratcheted up an order of magnitude and it hit me like a freight train. It was horrible.
Yeah, it was like you'd never even started at all and it just got worse.
Oh, it was way worse. Way worse after my brain had the chemical that it was so desperately wanting and needing.
I tried to tell people, you know, what it was like a couple of days after surgery when I looked up and realized that my brain was quiet. Did you get that moment?
After surgery? Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I'd been on hormones a lot longer than you had.
Right.
When I had mine. And so I didn't really have that because most of my dysphoria was gone. And then, of course, having the surgery took what little I had left away, literally and figuratively. but yeah, not to have the dysphoria. It's just, oh my God. For me, it was always feeling like I was going to vibrate into a million pieces. At its worst, I just thought to God, I'm.
And you have described it in the past as like having to play a guitar with one string out of tune.
Or all of them out of tune.
All of them, yeah.
Just you know, everything is not in tune. And yeah, I've described it though. It's like you're the only one who hears it. You got to play it like that all the time. Everybody else tells you you're in tune and what the hell is your problem? Oh my God, to tune your guitar and be able to play a song in tune is awesome. And that's how I look at myself these days, is that I'm in tune. Mind, body, and soul are all in tune, whereas before definitely was not. Huge dissonance all the time.
I got a note from Jeremy in Vermont who said, when you were talking about the people who winked and nodded at Jerry and Becca, Jeremy said, the ones who winked and nodded were the ones who weren't wearing the fully twink suits that didn't have eye holes, but sure as fuck had a flap to keep their mouths quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to go back to Southern Transgender Alliance just for a minute. It has Southern in it, but you've got membership from all over the country, don't you?
Oh, yeah. All over the world, actually. Yeah. It's not, you know, it started out just sort of being local group and then kind of spread into surrounding areas. And I was like, well, you know, everybody in Alabama and then Florida, you know, right here. You know, Mississippi is just a hot skip and a bunch away, New Orleans and Florida and so on. So I let anybody in. It's not a geographical thing. But I'd say the majority of the people in it are from the southern United States.
Is it mostly people who have already answered their own questions and eggs are shattered and
Oh no, we have a very diverse group of people in there. We have cis people who are allies. We have family members, spouses of trans people, a real smorgasbord, gay guys that are allies, lesbians that are allies. So it's quite a smorgasbord, and that's okay. I want those people to be able to join as well and get questions answered by trans people, you know.
Well, I know you take an attitude that is similar to mine in that, or maybe I took one. I took one, an attitude that was similar to yours, more likely. Because I said, you know, when I do this, let's, you know, I want people to be able to follow along. I'm not going to keep it all private and stuff, because I think we have to demystify ourselves.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not walking around with forked tails and hooves and horns,
secret decoder rings.
Whatever. Right. This isn't, you know, we're not a cult. We're not a religion. You see those that we're a cult or we're a religion or, you know, we have this huge agenda to transform humans into part machines. And
no, that's like, what the vaccine
really?
Does.
That's just bizarro. You know, they've said it about us that that's, you know, transhumanism kind of thing. No, you know, we just.
Well, when you connected in, I was talking about that pronouncement from the Diocese of Marquette.
Oh, yes. Yes. That lovely thing. Yeah. You need to repent before you can take the sacraments of the church. Okay.
How do you repent of being, I mean, if one buys into religion and everything, how does one repent of being the way that God made one?
I don't know. How do you repent of having blue eyes? How do you repent of that? Or nearsighted. I'm nearsighted as hell. I have to wear glasses. Am I going against God's will because I wear glasses or contact lenses to be able to see? Obviously it was God's will that I be nearsighted and blind as a bat. Am I sinning because I utilize corrective lenses to be able to see? Otherwise, I'm fucked. You know, I'm blind. I'm like a visual cripple without them. Same difference. It's like, how do you repent? How do you repent of being left-handed? That's still a thing. I found an article
was
published four years ago, 2017. By a Seventh-day Adventist. It was in a Seventh-day Adventist magazine. And I grew up Seventh-day Adventist, full disclosure. Not one now, but I never heard anything about being left-handed, being a sin or anything. But this guy was going on about how people who are left-handed should not serve in leadership in the church. Because even though maybe they were born that way or whatever, it's because of the fall and that you're just really damaged goods. And so you shouldn't be allowed to serve in the upper echelon. It's like, really? And he's talking about it being a left-handed lifestyle.
That's a lifestyle?
Lifestyle? Lifestyle being left-handed? That's a lifestyle? I mean, it's the same old crap. You know, some of the stuff he was saying, if you could just pluck out the phrase left-handed and put in transgender, same difference, same sort of arguments, you know. It is bizarre. It is bizarre to me how,
well, you know,
some Christians
it's
come up with this kind of crap, you know.
Well, you know, the word sinister, which we take to mean evil, is merely the sinister. Latin word for left.
Sin.
Left.
Yeah.
Sinister.
Mm-hmm. Sinister. Means left or left-handed. Yeah, sinister comes from that. Sinistral. Yeah, I know. It's like you're just automatically damned, you know. All because of, well, okay.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Annette just wandered by and waved at your picture on the iPad. So. Oh.
Hi, Annette.
And blew you a kiss. Hi, Annette.
Aw, that was sweet.
So, I mean, you
tell Terry I'm making you tea.
Oh, you tell Terry that she is making me tea. And I appreciate it. Decaf Earl Grey for anyone
that
who's curious.
That's very nice. That's very nice. So, yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't just passing by. She's making me tea. You know, what impact does it have, do you think, when an entire diocese makes a pronouncement?
Well, it has a huge impact, you know. It certainly isn't biblically based. There was no admonishment in the early days of Christianity in the first couple of centuries about who could not take communion. all that crap is very much a Roman Catholic invention. Very much, you know. I mean, you can't take communion in a Roman Catholic church unless you are Roman Catholic. The Protestant can't take it. You know. But to say, you know, you need to repent.
Well, I mean, if the whole goal is salvation, isn't that just kind of pushing people who they think are in need of it away from it?
You think?
A little bit.
That you have to come in perfectly spotless, basically, is the...
At which point there's really no need for grace or the cross or any of that?
At what point do you get accepted? You know, do you have to be the pure, pristine, unspotted lamb to be sacrificed kind of thing? Is that what it's supposed to be about?
That was never my understanding.
Of course, evangelical churches are, you know, yes, we accept you and you're welcome, but, you know, their admonition is also that you need to repent before you can serve or do anything at church. You can come, you can sit and listen, but you can't sing in the choir, you can't play in the band, you can't be an elder, you can't do all these things until you have repented of your sinful, sinful lifestyle. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still hung up on that word lifestyle.
Oh, I hate that word. You know, my life is not a lifestyle. Me being a woman, it's not a lifestyle. Regardless that I was identified as male at birth, my life that I live as a woman, recognized legally, socially, physically.
And by God, just so people can know, you had to jump through flaming barbed wire hoops down here to get that recognition.
Yeah. Exactly. I had to meet all the protocols. I had to meet all the tenets and of the law to be legally recognized as female in the state of Alabama. You know, I had to have surgery to have my gender marker changed in Alabama.
Yeah, there had to be some sort of language just to even get your driver's license. Mm-hmm. Hopelessly and irrevocably changed or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No going back. By the way,
you might be interested to know, I found the law firm here in Birmingham. And it's a huge law firm. And for their pro bono work, because every lawyer is supposed to do pro bono work, pro bono publico, their pro bono project is that they just handle all the birth certificate changes gratis.
Wow, nice.
So that's one of the things I have
to
do.
It might be the one I used because the firm I used was in Birmingham. And it took like 6 months, though. It's not a quick thing, so it took longer than I thought it would. And you get a lovely amended birth certificate.
Yeah, this birth certificate has been amended. And just, you know, just for people who are listening in civilized states where you don't have to go through all of that misery, take a moment for some... Wow, it's getting a little noisy around here. Take a moment just to consider what, you know, people in trans-hating states have to go through just to live their own lives.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, in Tennessee, you can't change your birth certificate.
At all.
And I think there's a couple of other states that you can't. And I believe that the Oklahoma governor recently did an executive order that
well, I found out the hard way in
West, that as well.
I so, found out the yeah. hard way in West Virginia that by an edict of the state Supreme Court, which of course is filthy with Republicans now.
Of course, yeah.
They said that circuit judges do not have the jurisdiction to order the Bureau of Vital Statistics to change a birth certificate at all. So I don't know how you do that now. Of course, I have an Alabama birth certificate, not a West Virginia one, so I have to go through the hoop jumping down here.
Well, you were born here, so yeah.
You have, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's such a crapshoot of it all, you know, hinges on where the hell you were born. It's what you can and cannot do as far as changing your birth certificate. And then, of course, everything, you know, your driver's license and all that evolves out of that. Of course, you can get a passport.
Yeah.
A federal document.
Yeah. That and that's still complicated. But, you know, Nitwit Nero made it so difficult to do. The Biden administration jumped out and rectified that fairly quickly. But it used to be that you could just go to your local county clerk, fill out the circuit clerk, in my case, fill out the form, go across the street, get your pictures, send it in with the money, and you get your passport back.
Well, that's what I did.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. I mean, in my case, I have to go all the way to Beckley, and it takes forever. You have to set up, because of COVID, you have to set up an appointment, blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, but I think that was more because of COVID, not.
Yeah, it is.
Because I was amazed that Pompeo didn't change all that, because Hillary put all that in place under Obama. Hillary did all that as Secretary of State. And so then it fell to Pompeo, and he didn't change any of it. That was amazing.
Genuinely.
I mean, that was my first legal document that had my sex as female.
So let me ask you this, given the wisdom that you have accumulated, and I never know exactly who's listening to the program or who finds the program.
Well, yeah, I can.
Do you have, based on, like I said, based on your accumulated wisdom, do you have any advice for people who are questioning or wondering, or for family members of people who are, can you convey anything that might help them along their road?
If you're questioning your gender, just the very thing of questioning your gender, you're trans. I just go out and tell you, you are trans. Now, what you do about that is, of course, up to you. What is the severity of your dysphoria? That's what drives us to change. You can know you're trans, but not be suffering enough, basically, to do anything about it. I mean, I knew I was trans since I was 11 years old, and mine did not become severe enough for me to want to do something about it until I was in my mid to late 40s. You reach that point, and I think we all do as trans people. We reach a point at somewhere in our life where the severity ratchets up, because it gets worse as you grow older. It gets worse. I mean, we have people transitioning in their 60s, their 70s, even in their 80s.
Yep.
You know, and if you're there, my strongest advice is to get a therapist who has experience in it that you can talk to in a safe, unjudgmental place. Don't get a Christian one unless there are a Christian who affirms who you are. And there are some of those. The last therapist I had was one of those, and she was great. She helped me work through my issues with my divorce. And she was Christian, but she was very much affirming of who I am as a woman, you know. And for family members, again, it's helpful to get some counseling if you're willing to do that. Try to get information from reliable sources, not Fox News, not far right rags, none of that. They're just
not the Diocese of Marquette. Stuff.
Yeah, not the Roman Catholic Church, not evangelical churches for the most part. There are churches that are affirming, and you can look them up for them. You know, the pray it away doesn't work. It's shown not to work in the gay community. Conversion therapy does not work. It causes more harm and pain to the individuals that are forced to go through it. And even individuals who willingly do that in the hope that they can get rid of it, it harms them as well. You know, it's something that has been proven not to work. Not to work. It'd be like, you know, trying to pray away your eye color. It's not going to happen. I don't care what you think, the amount of faith you have that's going to save you. It's not to say that miracles don't happen, but I don't know of any, of anyone in the trans community that was cured by God. I couldn't find one on the internet.
And you certainly got no answers, and, you know, you were a person of faith.
Oh, I got an answer from God. Yeah, I did. He told me a big fat no. I got an answer after 40 years of praying about it. And God told me no. That was it. The only answer I got was a big fat no.
You got a great big cosmic you do you.
Basically. And I was out of options at that point. You know, it was either a transition or die. By my own hand or just the stress of dealing with my dysphoria at the time was going to kill me.
Yeah. Stress is hell.
The stress was hell. Yeah, it was extremely severe. I have a picture of myself that I took on one of the worst days I had of dysphoria. And you could see it on my face. I am just dead. My eyes are dead. I look miserable as hell because I was.
Yeah, I took it
to remind myself. To remind myself of that day.
Because
we all go
forget.
Through the second guessing. You know, am I really doing the right thing? Should I do this? You know, all the woulda, shoulda, coulda's kind of crap that go through your mind.
So you and I being of you're what, 23 days older than me?
Birds of a feather, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think back? I mean, when you see, because, you know, young people are able to transition now.
Oh my God, you know, life would be different for us, Robin, if we could have done that, you know.
But we both would have been found floating face down in the Tennessee River, don't you think?
Well, yeah. No, I'm talking about if we had come of age in this period of history, this period of history, things would be very different. But God, no, that was not an option back then. Not even a fantasy, really, of being able to do anything about it when I was a teenager. You know, there was no internet. There was no Google. There were no forums. There were no support groups. There were no doctors. There were no therapists. You know, if I had told a therapist that I knew myself to be a woman and I wanted to transition physically and take hormones and ultimately have surgery, they would have taken me off and given me electroshock therapy because that's what they did. I had already read all about it, what they did to people like us. Yeah, there was no win in that at all.
Hell, they were doing electroshock therapy on kids who just, you know, didn't conform.
Yeah. Just think what they would have done to us.
I mean, I can think of two or three kids that I ran around with who just disappeared for 6 weeks. They kind of came back with a hollow and vacant look in their eye.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd had their brains fried.
Yeah.
Because they were out running around smoking the marijuanas.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, no way in hell I was going to tell anybody, pastor, therapist, my parents. Hell no.
No, no,
no. No, no. I was a smart cookie. You know, you just tried to, you know, find anything I could to read about it and trying to figure it out and the why of it, which.
Yeah, those two or three dusty, dusty books in the Florence Lauderdale Public Library.
Yeah, those, you know, four or five cards on transsexualism and transsexuals that were in the card catalog. That was pretty much it. You know, there wasn't no transgender. There was never a catalog file with that word on it. I didn't even know that word existed until sometime in the 90s. Yeah.
Oh, it's basically when it comes into
it was coined, I think, in the 60s or even earlier, but it wasn't a common wasn't a common term at all until much, much later. It was always transsexuals, transvestites.
Well, and the one place where you could hear the two terms used in one sentence was, of course, whenever they ran Rocky Horror on the midnight movie out at the Hickory Hills Cinemas.
Mm-hmm. Sweet little tranny or...
Sweet transsexual, sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and that certainly leaves one with a good mental image of us, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. Absolutely. The other thing that we're coming up on is another anniversary a date to be... We are 23 days away, oddly enough. There's that number again. We're 23 days away from the 1 year mark of when you joined me on air to sort of help me in the coming out process.
You're coming out on the air. That's right. That's right. Yeah. What a year it's been, honey. Yeah.
What a year.
I mean, even in your wildest fantasies, do you think that
never
this year, 2021, you would have GRS?
No.
That you would actually have it done?
No. And right up till the moment it happened, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Not trying to figure out a way out of it, but, on October 1st, when the insurance company said, nope.
That was a bad day. That was a bad day.
It was a horrible day. Interestingly, I wound up having conversations with the insurance company all the way up the line to their chief medical director, who apologized all over themselves and told me that quack who denied my claim no longer works for them.
Hey, good decision on that guy's part. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude,
excellent decision.
Yeah. Dude couldn't put a Band-Aid on a cadaver without killing someone.
No.
And they were careful to say, he's no longer with us. Of course, that's not because of anything you did, and it's not your fault. I said, I hope it is.
Well, I hope it was part of it,
Because he was on the verge of getting the living be Jesus sued out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have won. Because, again, there are no outpatient vaginoplasties. None.
Yeah, that was the first I had ever heard of someone claiming that that particular procedure could be outpatient. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's right there, right next to the Lee press on nails, the Lee press on vagina. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can just,
But now where
colonoscopy, right?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Right next to the outpatient heart transplants.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I moved toward it. I didn't think it was going to be possible. And I was amazed that it was. And at this point in time, I feel like it's a process of stair steps. You get up one, you get to the end of one flight of stairs and you're like, huh. And then you look and you go, oh, shit.
Oh, there's another one.
There's another flight. Mm-hmm. And so I was so eager, and yesterday for my 4-week post-op post, I put up a video. I think you saw it. I didn't know that Annette had taken it, but when they finally called my name, and we'd sat there for like a half an hour and like, what the fuck is going wrong? Something's going wrong back there. And when they finally called my name, I was like, boop, up out of the seat and walking toward the door. And I did not know that Annette was taking video of that. And so it was kind of wild to see when she shared it with me. So yesterday I shared it. So, just to mark the 1 month, the 1 month post.
1 month post. And then, before you know it, it'll be several years.
Yeah, like you.
It's three years, a little over 3 years for me.
At this point, I'm just looking for, and I know I'm over eager and I'm impatient. my mobility.
We all are, honey. So, you know,
my mobility is coming back.
Up over that.
My mobility is coming back, but the nagging pain is probably the biggest hurdle and impediment right now.
Well, what does your doc say about that?
Oh, it'll go away.
I didn't have any nerve pain. I didn't have any of that.
I don't know if it's because you and I had different methods or because of just how he structures the nerve bundle and reconnects everything.
Yeah.
But
something.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah, I sure as hell hope that goes away. It's like, you know, our mutual friend posted about, you know, she had the same surgeon.
Yeah, she was, and she's at her 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, and she's at her 1 year anniversary. And she was talking about granulation, how that had been her biggest issue. And it from what she posted, it seemed, I mean, pretty severe granulation, you know, constant, even after a year. To still have that's unusual.
And I guess granulation occurs in like 95% of 95% of the surgeries.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not, of course, granulation is not just specific to the surgery that we had. It can happen in any surgery.
Yeah, and, you know, but it's a gross.
Function of how the body responds to surgery, and it produces tissue basically where it shouldn't. And that tissue is a problem. I didn't have any. I fully expected to have it because, Lord have mercy, you read almost every trans person's account of their surgery, and that's almost always there as an issue, especially in the first few months. I never had it. I mean, I just, beyond wonderful, I'm very happy I did.
Well, I think you are, it's probably all that clean living.
I have no idea.
But now, a week from today, you know,
I wonder if it has something to do with how one scars, the scar tissue that one's body produces. And I don't produce, I mean, my scars on my skin and stuff are just fine white lines. I've never produced like big ropey scars, you know.
No, me either. And hopefully.
And I wonder if it's connected because, I mean, basically, you know, we get sliced and diced and everything knits back together. And where it does is scar tissue. You know, you have it. So I wonder if there's a relationship to that, maybe.
I mentioned they gave me an option of two different pharmaceuticals, neither one of which has proved to be acceptable to me because I just can't. It's so weird to say, but I just can't stand to be fuzzy and foggy.
And no, I don't either. I hate it. If I can handle the pain, I'd rather handle the pain, frankly.
Yeah, and so I've been told about one other drug that might be worth looking into, but based on the advice that I have received from this wonderful community, and I told this story last night, and I mentioned it to you too, I went and got some Delta 8 gummies. And they worked. I mean, they, but I did not expect them to get me freaking high. And I was, I was high.
They still have, it's not THC.
Well, but it's Delta 8 THC. But then I also bought, because go figure that this could be legal in a place out like Alabama. I bought Delta 9. Which is the psychoactive ingredient in pot.
Yeah.
I bought Delta 9 gummies. But it was the high part. I loved the pain relief, but it was just the fuzzy, foggy, stupid, stoned aspect of it. And I don't know, maybe somewhere along the way while I wasn't looking, I grew up or something. And I don't like to be that way. But
I've never liked to be that way. Being what people call high. I like a buzz from alcohol, but even that can cross over a certain threshold, and I do not care for it at all.
So next week,
don't like it.
A week from today is, at least as of current status, my last appointment, the 15th. And after that,
what do you do? Like video consulting with him is needed afterwards?
It kind of remains. It depends on what needs to be done. If I need revision work or granulation dealt with, I'm going to have to get on my horse and drive back down here.
Yeah.
But it won't be for like, you know, weeks on end. It'll be a kind of a here and gone.
Yeah. Cause you know, once I was discharged, I never saw my surgeon again, except on videos. Cause it was 800 mile trip.
That's nothing short of amazing.
So, but she was great. And, you know,
you can give her a plug if you want to, you know, mention her by name.
Dr. Keeley McPhee in Raleigh, Durham, amazingly wonderful woman and surgeon, just gave me the best care in the world. And, you know, I love my results. I have no regrets over what I've done. Very, very, very happy with my result. No complaints in any shape, form, or fashion. And I recommend her to anybody who's contemplating this surgery. So,
and
thank you, Dr. McPhee.
And she's got a pretty extensive, experiential list. I mean, she's done like 700 or so of these or something more.
I was patient 252.
I think I'm patient 20 something.
Well, you know, somebody has to be.
Yeah.
And when I was checking Dr. McPhee's record out, and I spoke to three of her patients. I spoke to patient number three. And she was just thrilled with her results still.
Well, you know, for me, there were a couple of reasons that went with making this choice. Dr. Self was highly recommended.
Sure.
But as I've told the community before, the Horn Family Community Congregation, my mother passed away after 7 months in the ICU at UAB.
It's kind of like karma closure for you.
Yeah, I wanted to take that stain off, if that makes any sense. And of course, I was born in Alabama, and I wanted to be reborn here.
Mm-hmm. I would have if it had been available. You know, when I had my surgery, that didn't exist in Birmingham.
No, no.
You know, it's amazing what happened in 2 years, really, because it really, you know, opened up last year when they started doing the surgery. So, yeah.
Well, and he does a fantastic job. Of course, I'm still
waiting. That would have been wonderful to have done it here in the state, not have a long-ass drive and, you know,
yeah,
all
just
that.
Just a four-hour drive back home staring straight into the sun, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
That's still just it. Whoever designed I-65 between Montgomery and Mobile needs to be, you know.
Yeah, it's just fucked, yeah.
Yeah, you literally, depending on what time of day you are, especially if it's late, you drive all the way with just the glaring, you know, boiling sun, right? And there's no getting around it. There's no dealing with it.
Oh, no. No. Mm-mm. And it's like they laid it out perfectly.
Yeah, because it's too low for your visor in your car.
No, like,
or else it finds or else it finds the spot between the two visors that you can't do a goddamn thing about. Mm. And I swear you could wear welder's goggles and you'd still be going fuck.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I've been driving around and it's not awful. It's not real comfortable, but I think I'll be able to, long around the 21st, pack up and we'll go up to Florence for a little while. And hopefully you and I will get together over the Christmas holidays.
Yes.
The plan, at least, is to be home before New Year's. Stay through Christmas, be home before New Year's. Because it's weird. I'm homesick. and I think I need human interaction, but I am a little nervous because going up into the teeth of winter in Appalachia, I sure don't want to slip or fall or anything. No, that fills me with the horrors.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was my fear, falling, tripping over a curb, getting out in and out of cars. Yeah. And of course I have stairs where I live, going in and out the front door, going up and down stairs every time I went anywhere. And it was just as careful as I could be, because I'd read, you know, stories from other trans women who had done significant damage to their surgery by tripping early on. So you know, you can rip a suture.
Well, there was another topic I wanted to broach with you. I'm probably going to just knock off a little bit after the top of the hour, because
broach away.
Three hours of sitting is a real challenge.
Yes, honey, it is. Warned you, told you.
I know. Did I listen? But
no.
I have periodically stood up and moved around and just changed the angle of the microphone.
Oh yeah, standing as much as you can, doing something like this, because I could sit for maybe 20, 30 minutes at a time for the first couple of months.
And it may be contributing to some of my pain too.
It probably is, because it hurts. I mean, that's the pressure. It was more discomfort for me. I never really had pain per se, but the discomfort was difficult to handle.
And this is something that people who go through bladder surgery, prostate surgery, anything
hemorrhoid surgery, involving downstairs between your legs.
Yeah.
it's affected by you sitting, you know.
It's one of the simplest of human activities, and it becomes one of the most challenging. But anyway, as to that topic I was going to broach, it was a year ago when our dear friend Darlene in Connecticut said, I hope you'll have Terry back on, because I want to hear more geology talk. And of course, you being a professional geologist. And I reached out to you and said, you know, let's talk about the John Lennon anniversary.
And we did.
And of course, you know, a year ago on New Year's Eve, the whole pretense was to talk about the separation of the continents. Before we got to the by the way, I'm trans.
Tectonics. Yeah.
Yeah, people.
Your own little tectonics in life. Yes.
And it's funny.
Huge separation of.
There are still members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who write to me every now and again, now and then, and go, "You're what? I guess I need to catch up."
Yeah, really. Yeah, I was like, when did that happen? Well, you know, long time ago, in a place far, far away.
But you wanted the
swarm of earthquakes.
Yes, there's an earthquake swarm. I didn't know. Is that the official term, swarm?
Yeah, that's a.
And it's off the Oregon coast.
Yeah, because they'll talk about that sometimes being an indicator that volcanoes are going to erupt. There can be swarms of earthquakes, you know, at depth below a volcano. And, of course, there's a string of volcanoes going through Washington and Oregon. That's where Mount St. Helens was, and Mount Shasta, and Mount Rainier. It last erupted in 1917, and odds are will again at some point. But yeah, those swarms of earthquakes occurring, and they're occurring like 200 to 250 miles off the coast of Oregon.
So most people aren't even feeling them.
No. Of course, they are Category 4 and 5, so you would feel them. You know, if they were below you, you would feel the shaking, most definitely. But they're not associated with any volcanoes. It doesn't mean the volcanoes in Washington and Oregon are going to erupt at any point in time soon. So it's just an interesting, and it occurs periodically, you know. There's not a single event. It has happened before. It'll happen again. And it's all associated with a plate that is diving down. And
that is what, a subduction zone?
Yeah, it's a subduction zone. Yeah.
Yeah, me remembering my vocabulary.
There's not a lot of plate left, actually, to go. And all those volcanoes will become extinct at that point when the last of the plate is subducted. But it won't happen in our lifetime, or our children's, or children's children's, or several generations.
What that means, though, is that, you know, the chance remains that, they're saying that these are shallow. Can you talk about the difference in effect between shallow quakes and deep quakes?
Well, it depends a lot on the type of rock. You know, these earthquakes are occurring about 10 kilometers, so that's about 6 miles deep. You know, kilometers, 0.6 miles, so
yeah.
Do the math, you know. So that's, you know, it's fairly, you know, for us, it's kind of deep, 6 miles, but earthquakes can occur deep, 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 you know, several hundred miles down. Generally, it's big, shallow ones that have the biggest effect on the surface, but it also depends on the type of sediment that you're sitting on. Unconsolidated sediments, like, you know, sand and mud and stuff like that, like the Mississippi Delta, coastal plain sediments that I'm sitting on and covers half of Alabama and Mississippi and into Georgia and up along the eastern coast, tends to amplify earthquake waves. On solid rock, it's not near as bad. So,
I've read in the past that there's an area of, you know, basically the Portland area that is at, you know, if the big one happens, shit's really going to hit the fan in Portland. Is this fault related to that?
I don't think this particular fault is related to that. Most times the big one is associated with the San Andreas Fault in California, which is a slip fault. You know, one plate is moving north and the other one's coming south. The other ones, and they can produce the big ones, like the one that occurred in Indonesia a few years ago, the Christmas tsunami. You remember that?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, that happens on a plate, and generally that's a deep earthquake, but the reason it does such damage is because it moves Earth several feet, and generally up. That's what produces the tsunami. When that amount of acreage is shoved upward, it also displaces that amount of water, the whole column of water, and then that wave, a literal wave, then radiates outward from where the earthquake occurred. And travels, like, you know, hundreds of miles an hour.
Yeah, so this isn't the same fault complex that resulted in that humongous one back in, what, 1700 or so?
No, I mean, it is a plate, but it's not that. Not the same kind. So, yeah, these quakes won't produce a tsunami.
Well, thank heaven for small favors.
The one up in Alaska can produce tsunamis, and there is a plate in Japan that produces tsunamis, which have impacted the Western seaboard at times in the past. That is the biggest concern with tsunamis on the Western coast, are the big earthquakes that occur in Japan.
Yeah, like the one that whacked Fukushima.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Those are bad.
It's all. It is also absolutely fascinating, and that I mean, it speaks to why you chose this for your life's work, because it's
I like rocks.
It's ever the planet seems very much alive sometimes.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you know, they talk about the ring of fire around the Pacific. And that ring of fire, there's a lot of volcanoes on these plate margins. All these plates that have a subducting plate always have a string of volcanoes on the plate that's not being subducted. Sort of like the plate that's riding over the plates that's being subducted. Because the plate that's being subducted is diving down, and it reaches a point in the Earth's crust where it melts. Turns to magma, and all that magma then rises and works its way through the crust back to the surface and comes bursting out. Violent eruptions sometimes. The Hawaiian volcanoes are odd in that they're not on a plate boundary. In fact, they're in the middle of a plate, and that is known as it's called a hot spot. And it is a plume of molten rock that is arising out of the mantle. It's really, really deep. It's very, very persistent. You can look at maps of the seafloor around Hawaii, and you can trace all the previous volcanoes as the plate migrates across the hotspot over the last several millions of years and makes a nice trail. The big island, Hawaii, is just the most recent one over it. And the newest island is already starting to form out in the Pacific, a little ways away from the big island. It's there. It's just hadn't hit the surface yet.
So there's going to be some more Hawaii in a couple of million years.
Oh, there's going to be more Hawaii. And, you know, and then Kilauea will go silent as it gets moved off of the hotspot.
You
know,
so
fire is cut off.
So I mean, do these things?
And they had a blizzard warning, by the way, this week.
Hawaii,
Kilauea.
Yeah, oh yeah,
Kilauea in Hawaii, a foot of snow because Kilauea is has an elevation of around 14,000 feet. It is the highest mountain on the planet if you measure it from its base,
which is underwater.
Yes, which is underwater, and mountains are almost always measured from sea level. But if you took the distance, it's like 35,000 feet from the base of the seafloor to, you know, the top of Mount Kilauea.
I had no idea.
Big-ass mountain. It's actually higher. I mean, it actually has more elevation from base to top than Everest does.
So there's how many thousands of feet under the water? 35 minus 14, 30, 21,000 feet?
Probably around 20,000, something like that. Yeah.
It's amazing.
My numbers right.
Astonishing. So
yeah.
People
don't think about that because, well, that's all underwater.
Yeah, kind of like the tip of the iceberg.
Right, yeah. Kinda, sort of. Yeah.
Well, it has been a delightful conversation, my dear sister.
I try to do my best.
Oh,
it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
But before we go, though, one of the things we announced on December 31st was that I was going to be your first guest on the show that you did called Trans Talk Raw.
Trans Talk Raw, yes.
And
which has gone by the wayside because of my co-host.
Well, I've fielded several questions from people wanting to know what happened to Terry. I don't want to put you on the spot or make anything uncomfortable, but could you address that a little bit?
Well, I mean, my co-host, Nikki Marie Dillon, who's a trans woman up in Canada and who I'd been doing the show with for almost 2 years, ghosted me, basically, after I thought we had worked it out to continue the show. She was having some issues in her professional life with doing the show, and she wanted to rebrand it and start over again and maybe not do as much of the political stuff that we had been doing. And I thought we had worked out, you know, more or less a compromise of some kinds to continue, and thought we were. And then she ghosted me, would not reply to text or email.
Apparently ghosted everyone.
Yeah, she just, and just really did not expect that. It was unexpected. I am very, very disappointed, hurt, and a bit angry. So,
understandable, understandable on all counts, but
and all the videos that we did, they're all gone.
Yeah, gone. That's the thing. The archive got disappeared.
All the archive disappeared, and that in itself is irritating, because there's a lot of time I put into all that, a lot of time. And just to ceremoniously dump it.
I was saddened to see that that one episode, you know, early January of this year.
I know.
Disappeared.
Yeah. And that was our most popular show, Robin. We had the most views of that show. The most of all of them. That was the best. Most highly rated. It was awesome.
And it's just gone.
But, you know, I'm going to try to see about reconstituting some sort of podcast to continue.
Well, that was my next question. Do you have plans for a comeback?
I hope, you know, I haven't finalized anything as of yet. Still ruminating on that. But yeah. And you and I are going to have some discussions regarding it. So, you
looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, something is going to be reconstituted. I don't know exactly what it is, but I hope it to occur around the first of the year. So, and it will be somewhat similar to what I did before, except we'll you know, take phone calls from the audience and stuff.
I think that'll be fantastic to expand the dialogue.
I think so, too. Yeah. And not just be a chat window. Yeah. I hope so. I miss it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, I was there. I was there every Saturday. It was my Saturday
ritual. I know. You were one of our most loyal viewers.
It was nice to be associated with a community of like of people like me.
It is. Yeah. I mean, because nobody understands us better than us. So.
And Jeremy in Vermont. Jeremy in Vermont just asked me, "Are you talking about the episode with Gandalf and Frodo?" Oh, but my God! When Annette pointed that out to me, we sat and laughed together until we were bawling.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, but because just the way the camera was set up made. Well, I understood how Peter Jackson did the Lord of the Rings after that. Fly, you fools. Well, I am looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to having conversations with you about it, and I hope it can come back bigger and stronger and badder and brassier and brasher than ever.
That's it. Absolutely. Better than we were before. That's all.
Exactly. Well, Terry, again, thank you for joining me this evening. I so appreciate it.
Thanks for asking me to be on. It was a pleasure and an honor, and most wonderful. Absolutely
a delight. And you and thanks for everything you've done behind the scenes to kind of keep my spirits up. And thanks for being here on the day that I got home from the hospital.
You're welcome.
It meant everything in the world.
I was thrilled to be there. And get to see you come out of there whole, and get to see and talk to you. Yeah, that was awesome.
And so it's getting better all the time, like the Beatles sing.
Getting better all the time. That's right. Yeah.
Better all the time. Yeah. Well, have yourself a lovely evening and enjoy the little slice of paradise where you live. I imagine it's still nice and warm and toasty.
It is. Oh, it's a little crisp today. It chilled down after the rain came through, but yeah, still nice. Yeah, it's not cold. So, but I love this time of year, actually.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And you know, after our couple of days at the beach there at the beginning of November, I've decided that's the perfect time to be there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially October. October is even better.
I mean, the light, just the position of the sun, everything is still
nice,
warm.
It's golden color.
Yeah.
It's not bright. It's not harsh. It's not blinding off the beat, off the sand. October is a delightful time.
And it's like having your own beach because there's not nearly as many people there.
That's right. All the crowds are gone and whatnot. So, yeah.
Well, I'm hoping we can do it again next year, kind of as an anniversary celebration.
That would be nice. Yes, it would. And, yes.
Well, okay. I look forward to seeing you up in Florence.
Mm-hmm.
And
about 3 weeks.
And I'm sure we'll be talking off and on because you know we do that.
Yes, ma'am. We will.
And absolutely. you have a lovely evening. And
you too, Robin. Good to talk to you.
I think I'm going to go and. Just kind of lay down and take some pressure off.
I think that's a fine idea.
I feel kind of, it feels lazy, but then it's like just nice not to hurt. So
that's really nice not to hurt. And to take the pressure off makes it better. You don't want to continue doing that because
I think I'm due for a dose of ibuprofen. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk to you soon. Love you bunches.
Bye, hon. Love
See
you too, girl.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The one and only, the irrepressible, the brilliant, talented, and lovely Terry Ellen. And thanks so much to her for kindly spending some time with us this evening. And Haley just said, I'm really enjoying hearing you and Terry live this evening here in Arkansas. Tell her I said hello. I certainly will. I couldn't see where you sent the message, Haley, because... Terry was coming through on Messenger. I always enjoy our conversation. And we managed to actually do what Darlene had so long ago requested. More rock talk. So, Darlene, if you're listening, I hope you enjoyed it. That's it for this evening. And by the way, Billable Rick... had put a challenge forward on the for this evening. I'm hoping we can carry it over tomorrow. Billable said, I just read an inspiring article about Amy Schneider, a politically aware 13-time transgender Jeopardy champion from Ohio, who has now won $536,400 and will be back on the show December 20th to defend her title. She's thrown some shade to Tim Ryan, who congratulated her success on the show. Representative Ryan wrote, in Ohio, we're great at making a lot of things, steel, rubber, glass, and Jeopardy champions. On the other hand, Amy's criticized the GOP for its discriminatory policies, writing, to any followers in Ohio, next year remember that no matter who the Republican candidate is, one of their goals in office will be to make life harder for me personally. Don't give them the chance. Good on her. It almost seems like activism comes with the turf. With this. But Billable said, and so in honor of Amy Schneider for Wednesday's program, I'm offering the Don't Give Them the Chance Challenge. I'll pony up $25 toward the program, which I'll double to $50 upon my challenge being met. P.S. Go Bulldogs, and Georgia, stop eating that farmer's dog crap. Billable is heavily invested. Thank you for that, Billable. If it doesn't happen this evening, I hope it will happen tomorrow. So if somebody will kick in $25, Billable Rick will match it and double it. And with an $800 fundraising goal, which, by the way, Jeremy, happy birthday again, got down to $790, that would be most helpful because it will be tomorrow at $1090. So thank you, Billable. And if anybody wants to jump in here as we're wrapping the program up, it would be most welcome and most helpful. Going back to Terry and me talking about electroshock therapy and things like that, Randy Radar said, they fry your brains and then they wonder why you're unstable for the next 30 years. I know, so many people were so hurt by that brutality. It's awful. So that's it this evening. Like I said, I'm going to go and take the pressure off and just recline and relax a little bit. Maybe find a bite of dinner. Thank you, each and every one. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House. We've got coming up on just 1 year left of this Congress. And let me just say, I'm getting really sick and freaking tired of hearing every multimillionaire member of the media think, well, you know, when the Republicans take over the House in 2022 elections, they're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. I swear to God, people like Joke Toad over at MSNBC are trying to engage in soft voter suppression by telling people, well, I mean, if it's just going to happen, why show up? And Andrea Mitchell interviewed Representative Pete DeFazio of Oregon after 36 years in the Congress. He's hanging it up. And she said, well, Mrs. Greenspan said, well, are you quitting because, you know, the Republicans are going to just take over? And, you know, to his credit, he did not call her an ignorant doyenne of the privileged class. He said, no, 36 years is enough. I mean, my God, isn't it? He's won 18 elections in his district in Oregon. And he did say, I think the Republicans are measuring the drapes a little too early. So there was that much pushback. But God, it's frustrating. But we've got 1 year left in this Congress, and that's 1 year left to finally get the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHE Act, passed. But it's going to take all of us, and it's going to take the goodwill of people reaching out to their member of Congress, far, far from Appalachia even, and telling them, sign on as a co-sponsor to this bill. And so I hope you will. If each and every one of the people in the sound of my voice would do that, we could probably make substantial progress. And, of course, the standard disclaimer applies. Get your shot, get your vaccine, get your booster, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, wear your mask, maintain your social distance. And, you know, if somebody comes burbling, wandering up in a House of Whoville hat and a lace dress saying, you can't have the magic cracker unless you repent for being trans, well, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.